Parkcast, the UK's original theme park podcast.
Welcome to Parkcast, the UK's original theme park podcast. And I'm back again, the milkman is here. Unfortunately, I've got to start by saying that Becca is not with me in the studio today. You are just getting my voice and my voice only. However, I have brought a very special guest into the studio just to fill in whilst Bex, unfortunately, is under the weather at the moment. Bex, sending you best of wishes, hoping that you'll be better soon. I have got the one, the only Mr. Sean Sandbrook with me.
How you doing? Yeah?
All good. Hey, welcome to Parkcast again.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been recorded from a travel lodge tonight.
We're in a very exotic location.
A travel lodge in the middle of a couple of theme park trips. But it's good to be on.
Yeah. It's nice to have you here, Sean. As I said, Becca unfortunately is under the weather at the moment. So Sean has very, very kindly offered to step in and fill Becca's place on the podcast episode today. And of course, speaking of people being very unwell at the moment, it's worth addressing and starting this episode with, of course, the news that is across the world right now, and that is that coronavirus has got a widespread plaguing of people all over the world right now, and it's kind of, you know, all that people seem to be talking about at the moment. And we wanted to start this episode with just saying to you all that, you know, everything that we do discuss is accurate at the time of recording. Any news that we share is subject to, of course, the after effects of what COVID-19 causes. We're aware at the very moment we're recording this, a lot of the UK parks are still operational and as going ahead as normal with their operations. However, we know internationally, in the US, in Asia and across Europe, there are a lot of tourist attractions closing right now and are already closed due to this virus. And we wanted to take a moment and wish well to everybody that is, you know, affected by this. And we send our love and regards to you all. Hope you're all safe and well. So, moving aside from that a little bit, it's time for this week's episode of Highs and Lows.
Highs and Lows.
So just a couple of things then to talk about this week. Of course, we've just mentioned the low, which I think is definitely worth mentioning. Coronavirus has had a knock-on effect on a lot of parks across the globe right now. Sean, you being a person who loves to travel to theme parks all over the world, you've seen so many different parks. Many of the parks that are currently closed you've previously visited. It's a really tough time for people, isn't it?
It is a really tough time. However, I can completely understand why the parks have closed. Of course, following on from government advice as well about being closed. Safety is paramount, isn't it? But as we're saying at this moment in time, the remainder of UK parks that are operating at the moment are open. However, you know, how long is that going to last? Obviously, by the time you listen to this, things may have changed. I suspect they will do. But, you know, all these countries, of course, are following their government advice. And at the moment, I think that's what's going on in this country. And that's certainly what we're doing at the moment. I mean, we're in the middle of a, you know, we've just done Legoland and we've got Chessington coming up tomorrow. So it's kind of like as usual at the moment, but taking extra precautions. And a lot of these parks have really thought about it. I was reading earlier on tonight about Blackpool Pleasure Beach, of course, a park that we're very familiar with, but they've been actually sort of washing down their rides and sort of sterilising restraints and all that sort of stuff on the hour, every hour, which is really, really good. Other parks have put sort of hand sanitizer stations and things all throughout the park. So it's one of those, just going to keep business as usual until we get told otherwise. There's no point in mass panic at the moment. However, if that the government decide that things need to go onto a lockdown, then I think that's when everybody should follow suit with it, really.
And we're going to continue talking to you about the news and the latest upcomings to parks across the globe, as if right now things are still in operation. First thing I want to tell you straight away is that Avengers Campus is due to officially open at Disney's California Adventure on the 18th of July 2020. We've previously touched on Disney California Adventure and the most recent additions to that park. Very excited for Avengers Campus to be opening there very soon. Some fantastic concept art and developments coming out of that. And actually, seeing some construction updates, it looks like the area is coming on really nicely. I don't know if you've got any thoughts on that, Sean.
I think it looks really, really nice. I think it's going to fit together really nice in DCA. The attraction itself looks like it's going to be really good fun. Web Slingers, we've got the name that's come out, which is interesting. It's not your typical sort of Disney name. But what I'm really liking with this is the fact we're going to see this stunt animatronic that Disney have been sort of practicing for a while and perfecting it. And it looks really, really good. Like, I'm sure you've seen it, Alex, this stunt animatronic. It's also in the Imagineering story in the last episode, if you've watched that on Disney Plus. Really, really nice how they've sort of covered that and shows it all together. It looks like it's going to be fantastic. But the area itself should be really good. And there's a lot of meet and greets going into the area as well. A lot of characters what you've not really been able to meet before at the Disney park. So it should be really nice.
Something very unique, something very different. But we're looking forward to it. We always like different and new things. Another thing quickly just to touch on. I haven't got any dates or anything like that for you. But I just wanted to tell you I've seen some updates recently from Max and Moritz. The two new coasters that are being built at Efteling. And we know we've got a lot of Dutch fans who love listening to podcasts. Big shout out and hello to you all. Sean does love the Dutch as well as I do.
I love everybody from the Netherlands. Hi to you all. It's great that you have such a passion for the industry. It really is wonderful.
So yeah, Max and Moritz is coming on really, really nicely. Some very, very heavy theming going into that station build, and it looks very, very exciting. And I must say, seeing those trains firsthand look absolutely beautiful. I cannot wait to get out to Efteling and ride those two coasters very, very soon. I'm sure you're very excited as well, Sean.
Max and Moritz is really interesting because they're putting these two new coasters in. It's replacing a classic attraction. And as much as the part we're kind of forced into it being removed, from what they've put in so far, it looks really good. However, I'm hoping for some more theming around the rest of the coaster layout. At the moment, it is looking quite bland around the coaster. But there's some planting and some rocks and things going in there. But I'm hoping for a bit more in terms of theming around, because at the moment it looks like two coasters on a bit of barren land.
So. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, it's very, very empty. Once you get past the station building, there is a lot of nothingness surrounding those two coasters. So hopefully you're going to see that there. And also, Sean mentioned it briefly, we've just been to Legoland to see the new Duplo Valley area and get onto the new Duplo Dino coaster that opened today, of all days, the time of when we're recording this. But we have got some other investments that are opening in the UK this year. We've got the new rides coming to Fantasy Island to celebrate their park's 25th anniversary. Something very exciting. I'm sure, Sean, you'll be visiting Fantasy Island very, very soon. And of course, we've got new rides coming to Chessington World of Adventures. And one that I think we really should touch on, especially while Sean is here, being it's such a special part to Sean. We have got Gangster Granny, the ride, coming to Alton Towers in just 7 days' time, Sean.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully everything's going to go to plan with the opening. We've seen quite a lot now from Gangster Granny. I mean, ITV did a report a few weeks ago where we got our first look inside. And from what I saw from the interior, I really like the look of it. It's more the exterior and the rest of Cloud Cuckoo Land, as it was, that I'm a little bit unsure on at the moment. Just saw some photos today, actually. The park's been open for a private hire. And obviously people have been nearby to the new ride. And the exterior looks quite cheaply done. And the interior, I think, looks like it's going to be really good. And of course, the interior is the bit that you want to be the best, the ride itself. But I was kind of hoping for a little bit more from the exterior. But of course, we'll see what it's like next week, hopefully.
And seeing some of the updates as well from this private hire event, it's quite interesting to see what else is being developed in the area. Some of the rides that were already there previously, the carousel and Froghopper, have been relocated, but also re-themed to fit in with the area, which is very exciting. Something new, something different, some changes to Alton Towers. Yes, we've still got a bit of a brand clash at the moment up in Cloud Cuckoo Land, because you, as you enter the Cloud Cuckoo Land surrounds, you're greeted by the Sky Ride and Burger Kitchen, which seem to follow a very typical Cloud Cuckoo Land theme still, followed by the Alton Towers Dungeon, which fits a very separate brand all in all, and then the Wonderful World of David Walliams, which kind of takes its own little place. Then to the side of that, you've also got Driving School, which kind of stands solo as well. It's a little bit of a weird a placement of this area, actually. I would have thought they'd try to incorporate a little bit more of certainly Driving School into that area and think about the Sky Ride Station and the Burger Kitchen restaurant there. But who knows what the future of this investment in Alton Towers will be, and if there will be any more to come in the future.
It seems like the Driving School isn't part of the World of David Walliams, which is interesting. I mean, we don't know that officially yet, but from what I've seen, it looks like they're not really classing that as part of the area. It's just the three rides, the Dark Ride, the Carousel and the Froghopper. So be interested to see next week, because like you say, it's a bit wishy-washy at the moment. That whole back end of the park's very mismatched at the moment, even with Dark Forest, in my opinion.
And subject to what we've obviously talked about as well, of being the nature of the world we're living in at the moment, hopefully by the time this episode is released, you'll all know whether Cloud Cuckoo Land has completely been eradicated or still elements remain, with the Driving School and of course out by the Burger Kitchen restaurant and Skyride Station. Moving on from that anyway, Sean and I decided that we're going to have a little bit of a discussion in today's episode all about the wonderful use of Fast Track.
Parkcast. The UK's original theme park podcast.
So yes, Sean and I are going to attempt to tackle the very difficult subject of Fast Track.
Ugh.
I know, that Sean's noise there said it all, quite literally. This is a subject that Sean and I feel very strongly about, and I think we actually share quite similar views on. Fast Track, for those of you who might not be too aware of how different Fast Track is across the world, let me give you some little summaries of what we're talking about. This is people who pay for line jump, queue jumping passes at theme parks, actually paying an upcharge on top of their ticket price to be able to not wait in line. We're not talking about disability access. We're not talking about single rider queues. We are going to tackle the subject of paid Fast Track to parks across the globe. Now, parks have very, very different variations of pricing structures, ticketing structures for Fast Track and how it operates. You look at the Speedy Pass at Blackpool Pleasure Beach, you're given a little Tamagotchi-style key fob that has all of your rides on there, and you pick which rides you want to go to. It gives you a time scale, and I believe it costs you for an unlimited one about £45 for a day. If you head over to Alton Towers, it will cost you around £90 for unlimited Fast Track on all of the rides all day. Some of the parks in the US, for example, Cedar Point, I do believe it will cost you approximately $70 for a day's fast lane for their rides to unlimited. Now, Sean, I'm really interested to get your thoughts, even though I think I know what's coming. What is your honest opinion of Fast Track at theme parks?
Right. So the issue is your Fast Track. Is it's all well and good if you've got a high-capacity ride that's doing 1,200, 1,400 an hour, people through. But when you've got rides that have only got a throughput of about 350 an hour, then they should not have Fast Track, in my opinion. So, as much as I'm not a fan of it on any ride, at any park, and that's why I like Europa Park so much, because there's no Fast Track, everyone's treated equally, you pay for a ticket, and everyone's treated equally. You know, not everybody can afford the luxury of Fast Track. So that's the first thing. But in terms of, you know, it depends on the ride. Like, if you've got a low-capacity ride, it should not have any Fast Track. If it's a high-capacity ride, they need to make sure that it's done fairly. And that's my issue that with a lot of parks that I've seen now. And the worst park for Fast Track is PortAventura in Spain. Like, lovely park. The Fast Track and the operations are abysmal. And what they'll actually do is, on Shambhala, if it's running two trains and it's busy with Fast Track, they'll actually do a full train of Fast Track and then a full train of normal riders.
And that is wrong.
It is wrong. And it's not fair on the main queue. Not everybody can, you know, people have spent the money to go to the theme park. Not everybody can afford Fast Track. I don't like spending on Fast Track. The only time I'll use Fast Track is if it's being given to us as part of going to an event. I would never pay for Fast Track. I don't like it. I don't agree with it. I just think it slows down the main lines. It's not fair on other people. However, I can understand someone who might want to buy it if you've got a limited time at a park. But my thoughts on it, and if I had a theme park, I wouldn't offer it. So that's where I am with it.
I think I'm going to share a little story from one of Sean and I's adventures from last year. We went on a previously discussed USA road trip. I'm sure many of you who've watched Theme Park Worldwide, Sean's channel, will be aware of exactly what we did and the feat we took part in. So we visited Kings Island for the day and didn't have the best of experiences. And we're always honest whenever we don't have a good day. We always talk about our experiences, of course, on Theme Park Worldwide. But generally speaking, we like to make the park aware of the experiences, both good and bad. We always try and be honest and fair. Unfortunately, we didn't have the best of times. We spoke to a guest services team manager and they decided to offer us, which was very kind of them. They found out that we were off to Cedar Point the day after, some fast lane passes for Cedar Point. We arrived at Cedar Point, a park that Sean had already previously visited. Myself and Brett had also visited. Myself had never visited before. And as we arrived at the guest services counter to collect some of those fast lane passes, we were expecting maybe three or four. They actually gave us unlimited fast lane for the duration of the day that we were visiting. So day one at Cedar Point became much faster, much quicker, because we were able to fast lane on all of those attractions. Now, one of the talking points that day was how great, of course, it was to be able to fast lane and how much we were able to do in one day. However, it also raised the question of family budgets and, you know, as Sean did touch on briefly, not everybody can afford to buy Fastlane or Fast Track at these theme parks. I know certainly my family, and I'm sure Sean's happy to say that both of our families grew up on very low income wages, very low income households. We weren't able to afford those kind of luxuries when visiting theme parks when we were kids.
We were lucky to go. Never mind having all the extras such as Fast Track and merchandise.
I never ate in theme parks. When I was a kid, we used to go to American Adventure, my mum and I. Never once ate there. It was always packed lunches because that was all we could afford to live on. We could afford to buy the pass once a year to visit that park. But let me tell you, that was where the money stretched to because, you know, we were on a tight budget. So to think about Fast Track and the people who were able to wait in line or, not wait in line, it felt like a different class structure. And actually, it does cause a bit of a divide in these parks as to who has money and who doesn't and what perks they get, in my opinion.
I just think it should be fair for everyone. And that's the good thing with the Disney parks. Of course, they offer a free FastPass service, which is fantastic. I still don't really agree with it. I still prefer the system of not having any. However, at least they do offer it for free and it's available to everyone.
First come, first served.
So I do like that. You know, anybody can go to the park and they can physically go to a booth and get a fast pass. Or, of course, if you're at Walt Disney World, you can use the My Disney Experience app.
Up to 2 months in advance.
You know, which is good. You know, it's a great system, but it still impacts the main queue.
Definitely.
I still like the fact that, you know, it's advertised 20 minutes for everyone. You know, and everybody will wait that. Of course, you've got your disability access. That's completely fine. But in terms of a paid service or even a free service, I just don't really like it. I'd much rather have the ride as a standby queue. You know exactly what it says on the tin. 20 minutes. Everyone's waiting it who wants to experience that ride.
I think what we've talked about as well and that we find really difficult with the subject to address is, if you're visiting somewhere abroad, say you're travelling a long way, whether you're travelling from the US to the UK or off to Asia or wherever you're travelling to in the world, depending where you're listening to this podcast, actually, you know, you really want to get the most out of your time. And if you're doing something where you're seeing multiple destinations in one trip, you really want to consider what options you've got available. Now, sometimes the cost of a Fast Track or Fast Lane can be the same price as a day ticket to the park, can sometimes be double the cost of a day ticket to the park. Certainly nearly as Alton Towers shows, with almost double in price for the cost of Fast Track on top of your already admission price around £58 per day. It really is worth thinking that actually, does it benefit me and my trip in any way, shape or form? Because sometimes people consider that if I'm visiting somewhere like Cedar Point, as we just mentioned, rather than having 4 days at the park, you could buy 2 days and pay for 2 days of fast lane for those 2 days of visiting. And you'd be able to guarantee you get everything done that you'd usually do in 4 days in the main lines across 2 days. However, you've got to think of that extra cost, and also then you're taking away the opportunity to experience some of the smaller parts of the park. For instance, at Cedar Point, I'm sure Sean will remember, there is a fantastic little Wild West style walkthrough that was put into the park very recently. And we actually described on Theme Park Worldwide's vlog that we could have spent a whole day walking around there and taken in the atmosphere. And that is something that Fastlane actually does absorb quite a lot, is your opportunity to just explore these parks. Certainly somewhere like Alton Towers, where there's a beautiful gardens, of course, the towers and all the history and ancestry that that building has to offer and the whole site as a whole, you really are losing that opportunity, because when you've got a Fastlane, not only do you want to guarantee you get on all the rides all day, but you don't want to be wasting time in between not doing things. Would you agree with that, Sean?
Yeah, I mean, if you've paid $70... you want to get that $70 worth. You want to run around like mad and get everything in, which then kind of takes away part of the experience. And then it leads on to the whole, you get that excited feeling when you're waiting for a ride. Like if you are waiting maybe 10, 15 minutes in a queue line, you're watching the ride, you're seeing the atmospheres, of course, at a park that's got pre-shows and that sort of thing, you get in the full experience. Sometimes I actually would enjoy a ride a lot more if I have to wait a little bit. I mean, the ideal situation for me is being at a theme park where you wait, you know, 15, 20 minute queues instead of walking straight on, because then you still get the experience. You get to be immersed in it and you get excited for that ride instead of just walking straight onto it. And that's a big part of it for me. That's the whole experience of going to a theme park.
And typically when you enter a fast lane or fast track line, you actually get to miss quite a lot of the experience. A lot of rides in Europe especially have pre-shows, themed queue lines, scenes, atmospheres, before you even enter the ride station building. And they're things that you really don't want to miss out on. You really don't want to miss walking through those quirky queue lines. Take Wickham Man at Alton Towers, for example. Walking around that coaster, being built up in the immersion of the smells and the sight of that wooden ride. You really would miss out on that by being in the fast lane, because you don't actually get the full experience. You are getting a reduced experience. Yes, you may be getting a reduced wait time. Sometimes, not always, depending on how many people have bought Fast Track for that day. However, it's something that you really need to consider, that these parks are trying to make profit out of you. As of course, as you can expect, it's a business at the end of the day. However, you can have just as good a day waiting in the main lines, not racing to do everything and taking your time to soak in the atmosphere, than sometimes you can racing from coaster to coaster, ride to ride, to try and fulfil your fast track commitments. And I know Sean and I feel very passionately about fast track and why we don't think it's suitable for UK theme parks, worldwide theme parks, to be advertising. We understand the ease of it and the soft nature of why people don't want to wait in line. But generally speaking, we think you can do so much more with your time in a day in a theme park, just waiting in those main queues, soaking in the atmosphere with the people you love and care about, actually having time to talk to each other, stop a minute, have a breather, grab a drink even. I know Sean and I are very keen to eat our packed lunches in some of these longer lines at the UK parks. But really, it's a great time to come together. And that's certainly something we should be doing a lot more of in the world right now, is coming together, certainly through the difficult times that we're facing. And we just personally feel that Fast Track isn't something that should drive the parks of the future. Certainly monitoring queue lines, saving time on people waiting, getting higher throughput rides and attractions built, certainly at the busier theme parks. And more attention to detail sometimes in the queue lines is needed. I mean, you know, Sean, you know as well as I do, sometimes you go to Six Flags and you can be waiting in line for a coaster. And it is quite mind-numbing, especially when it's mainly just cattle pen queue lines and there isn't much theming to take note of. Sorry, I'm just giving Six Flags as an example. However, it can be quite mind-numbing sometimes. But, you know, I don't know about you, but I feel like I'd rather be in some mind-numbing cattle pen than be trying to race through fast track lines all day.
Yeah, definitely. And the thing is, for me as well, it's getting to the stage now, as much as we don't like Fast Track, there's a few parks out there now where you're kind of forced to buy Fast Track for you to have an enjoyable day. And, you know, a couple of parks out there, one I've already mentioned, that's Port Aventura. You know, if you want to go to that park during a busier period of time, you kind of get forced into buying the Fast Track because, you know, with Shambhala, I've seen it on one train before, which is their B&M Hypercoaster, you know, you've got one train running around on it. It's a 3-minute ride. Throughput, you may be getting, you know, 600 an hour probably through it. So the issue is, you're kind of forced to buy the Fast Track, else you're not going to get anything done. A part where me and Alex, had to buy Fast Track was Fuji Q.
Yeah.
Which is Fuji Q Highland in Japan. With that park, you kind of have to buy Fast Track, else you wouldn't have got the major rides in that one day.
They have a system at that park where if the ride line is 90 minutes and the park is closing at 5 o'clock, the queue line will actually close at 3:30 in the afternoon. They decide that they don't want the parks and the rides to be running any later than the actual ride close. It's not just ride close that's advertised, it is park full shutdown. So you really are forced into a situation. I think we spent about maybe £20 or £30 on Fast Track that day, if I remember rightly, Sean.
Yeah.
And that wasn't for that many rides either.
It was for maybe three or four rides.
You know, it wasn't too many. It wasn't certainly a day's worth. And there were still things in that park we didn't actually get time to experience because we had one day to make the most of it. If you're there for multiple days, I actually think Fast Track becomes more obsolete, certainly not less. If you're there for one day, you want to be able to enjoy all the rides in that park. And certainly these parks that are trying to force their guests into buying Fast Track should be really considering, is it up to the guests to buy Fast Track, or is it us to build more highly operated, faster throughput attractions for our guests to enjoy?
Yeah, I definitely agree. And going back to Fuji Q, you know, we were pretty much forced into it, as we wouldn't have got what we wanted to do, and we still didn't with having the Fast Track that we bought. And that was just for one shot. You know, that was for one ride on those. It wasn't unlimited, and it was quite expensive. Worth pointing out as well, we actually had to run to the fast track booth to get those. It wasn't a matter of, oh, there was plenty of fast track available even. They go early. I mean, we've done a lot of research before. I know other people who've been, and I knew that we had to get to the booth early to buy those fast tracks because they would then sell out. And they did. Like, at park opening, instead of people running to the rides to get in the queue, they run into the fast track booth. And for me, when that's happening at a park, there's a clear issue and there needs to be some resolution to that, because it's that is not our healthy theme park should be running. And don't get me wrong, we had a great day at Fuji Q. We loved the park, we enjoyed the rides, but from an operational point of view, it was one of the worst operated parks I think I've ever seen.
It's very clear that the money that's made from guests is the paramount thing at that park, and that is sad because so many parks in the world don't make you feel like you're just there to give the company money. They want to immerse you into a world, and the details and the way they build the atmosphere around you should be critical, not the billboards advertising the discounted food and drink, the fast track available and the retail prices. Because really, you are buying into a theme park company. No matter where you go in the world, you are buying into something. However, it's how you feel like you're getting your value for money that counts. These parks that know they have fast track issues, but don't seem to do anything about them, it makes me really sad. Fuji Q Highlands is a perfect example, as Sean mentioned, of a park that clearly, you know, knows its system and knows that people rely on those fast passes to get onto those rides. However, it doesn't look like it's something that's going to change anytime soon, which is very, very sad indeed.
We've got a bit of a fast track issue closer to home, and a park they're actually going to tomorrow, because of course Chesterton World of Adventures are quite well known. I've called them out on this, and for actually bumping up queue times to sell fast track as well. And Chessington, I'm looking at you. You are a part that do this. There's other parts that do it, but Chessington is a big one for it. And I will be seeing what it's like tomorrow. But Chessington especially are a park that will bump up the main queue time on rides, especially the likes of Vampire, one that me and Charlotte had last year. Vampire was advertised at 90 minutes. That's 90. We waited 15 minutes and there was somebody at the entrance of the ride selling fast track.
Just to bump up the sales.
So there we go. Just have to get that in there. Sometimes it's a matter of they're doing it intentionally, and I know Chessington's a part that does that quite a lot, so hopefully we're going to see a reduction in that, especially now it's gone back to a public company.
And if you feel passionate about
private company,
if you feel passionate about this like Sean and I do, make sure you're giving this feedback honestly to the parks. If you feel like they're trying to missell you something, if you feel like you're having a disservice, or even if you feel like you're having a good day and you want to pass that feedback on, it's so, so important to let the parks know in the most fair and constructive means possible. Don't go on Twitter, spamming them with bad tweets unless you feel like you really have to. Just be honest, send an email, go to guest services if the wait lines are down. If not, ask for an email address to send your feedback through, because your voice counts in these parks more than the staff's voices 9 times out of 10. Your voice is so important in these parks. If you want to see your parks be saved, changed, evolved for the better in any way, shape or form, your voice counts.
Parkcast. The UK's original theme park podcast.